Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Second Act Actors. I'm your host, Dr. Janet McMorty, and I'm still a medical doctor, simultaneously trying to pursue a career in acting. My guest this week is Sean Sims. Sean is a football player turned actor. I'd say football security guard turned actor. Sean is a very near and dear friend of mine, and this episode made me cry more than any other episode I've ever cried on. And if you've been watching these episodes, you'll know that I get emotional. But Sean made me cry several times. And if you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see it. And if you're listening, you'll probably hear it in my voice. Sean is, again, a near and dear friend of mine. He is one of the most genuine, sincere, lovely human beings I've had the privilege of meeting in these last few years. We laugh about this. He's a big, big dude. He's big. Big Simsy, plays big football playing Sean, but is such a teddy bear who's been through so much in his life and has a beautiful story to tell. We talk about, and again, trigger warning here, we talk about both of our mothers passing away from cancer. We talk a lot about race. We talk about typecasting, and we get into a lot of really emotional stuff that honestly, I really appreciate Sean being so vulnerable in this conversation. I knew he would be. Again, I've known this guy for a while and I've been wanting to have him on my show. He's a true, true friend. Please enjoy. Oh, I'm getting emotional already and this show hasn't even started. Please enjoy one of my favorite human beings on this planet, Sean Sims.
Just did a double shift, so I just got off.
Oh my god!
And I am like wired.
And you had your audition, and now you have this.
No, I enjoy this. I enjoy when we talk and stuff. This is
this is chill. Bonus.
Yeah.
So, were you awake all night?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah, I had a Tim Hortons coffee with a shot of espresso.
Nice.
Good. Yeah.
Have you gotten on to so speaking? As somebody who also works night shifts, have you gone to the energy drinks yet?
No. Oh. I tried it a couple times and it's just a hum and a hum and a hum. Now, a pre-workout, oh my gosh.
Okay.
A pre-workout and then your face is all like tingly and you want to rub your face and it's like, that is the shit.
I find pre-workout worse for me than energy drinks, which I'm like, I don't know what is on the scale of like coffee to cocaine as a doctor. Like, where's the happy medium of like, I am awake and can perform surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But pre-workout, I find like I can't do the pre-workout before my workout. My hands are too jittery.
Yeah. I feel like the ultimate warrior. I'm like, let's do it.
Lift heavy things.
Yeah. Yep. Pick it up and put it down. Sit.
Well, tell me your story. How did you get into this crazy business and now working night shifts and doing all the things you do?
Oh, shoot. I guess you start off when I was younger. I always wanted to be an actor. I've always wanted to like write and screenplays and all this stuff. And I was just like, I was so big that I thought like, who would want to hire me, right? And so I had to make this choice between like football or trying to be an actor. And football was like really working out for me. So I was getting, you know, starting to get looks and scholarship offers and all types of stuff. So, you know, I decided to go with that. And then my mom was really sick. So it was just like football just seemed like the route to go. And, you know, I went through my football career and I finished up just when my mom passed away. So I retired and I started working at this hospital. And when I was working at the hospital, I started dating this nurse and we were really working on getting outside of our lanes. So, you know, like I was good at my job. I was doing security. She was good at her job. And we never kind of strayed from the path because, you know, staying outside, getting outside of your lane is really awkward, right? And, you know, you're starting all over again. And you don't want to start all over again. You just want to be good, right? So we started doing salsa and bachata lessons, right? And from there, it was, we had a conversation and she's like, well, what do you really want to do? Because I don't see you as a security guard, you know, for the rest of your life. And I'm like, I always wanted to act, but I never thought, you know, anybody would pick me. And it's weird because I was in this movie with Michael Clark Duncan, like this, like, you know, straight to DVD movie or whatever, like a Hallmark Channel movie. And it was a football movie. And it's just like he was an inspiration. So we started looking for an acting school, right? Now, my first acting school was kind of like Cobra Kai, right? I always related to Cobra Kai where it's like, you know, it was like a bunch of different teachers. So you were placating to which teacher was there that week. And then the head teacher was kind of like, you know, he was very flirtatious with the girls, but, you know, he didn't want it. I don't know. He was just like, this is how you take the scene, you know, the person's angle and get a close up and all this stuff. And it's like, I don't want to learn this. I want to learn how to act. Right. And, you know, but I'm one of those guys who tries to stick through. So I was there for like a year and some change and I was just not liking it. And my girlfriend at the time, like, felt it. And she's like, let's find you, like, a better school, right? So then we started looking, and I found my Miyagi-Do. You know, it was just a really cool guy. I was training there ever since. And then it was, you know, I was training there for, like, 5 years. And I was keeping it like on the down low at work and everybody see the binder and I'd be studying my monologues and all this stuff. And it's like, what are you doing? It's, don't worry about it. Don't you worry about what I'm doing. I'm, you know, and, you know, I'm seeing like my peers in the class, they're, you know, getting their agents and their booking and, you know, and at first I was like, maybe I'm not ready yet. I think there's so many things I have to work on and blah, blah, blah. And then after that, I was working a lot of overtime and I was like, manana, I'll do it, you know, in the spring, I'll do it in the summer, I'll do it next year. And, you know, and then, 2020, the end of 2020, I lost my job and it was really like, what am I going to do? Like, oh my gosh, like it's over. Like what? I don't know what to do. And then something in me just said, Sean, it's like, you've been training for, you know, 5 years now. It's time to shit or get off the pot, right? And, you know, 3 days later, I found an agent. And a week later, I booked my first show, one of those reenactment shows. And, yeah, it's just ever since, like, it's, you know, incrementally getting better and better. I just love the adventure.
Oh my God. I have so many questions. I'm a little emotional thinking about young Sean. Why, when you were younger, what was it about acting that you loved?
I think it was when I was a kid, I used to, you know, my mom, it was a single parent family. She didn't want me to, you know, go out in the streets and get into trouble. And, you know, it's just like I was her only son, right? And she really wanted to break. So I was like always in the house. I was always in the house and I would be playing with my, you know, action figures and I would be coming up with stories and, you know, different voices and personalities. And, you know, so I always had an easier time, like, you know, expressing myself and putting myself out there. It's weird. It was like, I was shy as a kid, but when it was like, you know, you put me on a stage or whatever, or like drama class, it was, I was out there, right? And I think athletes don't, are it's easier for athletes to put themselves out there, because I just, I feel once you're around a team and, you know, you show yourself to the team and like, you know, your personality, you don't really care. Cause you only care about like how the team judges you, not anybody else. All right. Yeah. So go on.
Well, something you said really hit me really hard, and you talked about being a big dude.
Mm-hmm.
And no feeling like no one's good. A lot of men, you're a big dude. Anyone who knows you're a big fucking teddy bear. And the feeling of not thinking anyone would hire you. So then going towards something like football, because mm-hmm. that's where people would hire you. Tell me more about that. That like breaks my heart, but it also is a reflection of these visual industries that I think you found yourself in acting, football, security, right? Everything's mm-hmm. very visual. Like you have to be big to do the job you've done. Mm-hmm. You've been typecast.
That's true. That's true. I never thought of it like that. When I was a kid, I was, I was really small and like skinny and lanky. And my mom put me in like martial arts class. So I was taking this karate class, and, you know, I even got like thinner because it was just, I was doing it like maybe 2-3 times a week. Right. And then when I got into high school, tryouts came, and I was like, I'm probably not going to make it. What's the point, right? Just concentrate on school. And one day the coach walked by me. He's like, hey. I'm like, yes. He's like, why didn't you go out for football? I'm like, oh, I didn't think I was going to make it. He's like, you're on the team. Just be there at practice, right? So when I got there at practice, and, the first like year and a half, I was getting my ass kicked at like all over the place. And I went to this combine, and I met like, I had a lot of father figures in my life. So, you know, I had my sensei, I had my coach, John Simons, for Mississauga Warriors. And he took me under his wing, and he made me a better football player. And when you're, you know, growing up, and, you know, like where I was from, it was just like, you know, the quickest path and the most successful path was like sports and playing football and getting there. And I just, you know, my mom was sick. She had kidney failure. And I'm just like, I have to be able to take care of her. And I just didn't know, you know, what I was going to do. And I'm like, I have to play football. And while I enjoyed playing football, I didn't love it. Like, my friends loved it. I love the camaraderie because I was, you know, I had friends, but, you know, once I started joining the team, it was like, you know, you have friends for life and family, right? But like my friends could play, you know, go 2-a-day practices, watch film, go back home and, you know, play Madden. But for me, it was just like, I want to, you know, watch this show, or I want to write this and, you know, draw, so it's like, I loved it. I loved the camaraderie, and I enjoyed my career as a football player, but I didn't love it like my friends, but I love acting, you know? And I guess it was just like acting was like that girl that you were in love with, but you never thought that the girl would give you a chance. And then, you know, you realize she was just waiting for you to talk to her like the whole time, you know?
Oh, that's so lovely. It's interesting because I think like there's so many things about your life story that are fascinating. And I think having worked with a lot of high level athletes, it's interesting to see that as a career that is all encompassing, because it truly has to be.
Yeah.
But I think more so than a lot of other careers that I talk to people about, athlete is not just a career, it's your identity.
And yes.
There's a huge loss yes. when retirement occurs, especially in young people like yourself, in a sport like football where a career is very short-lived and you're retiring from your career before people in your peer group have even started their careers.
Yeah.
You're already going through a retirement grieving process, but huge because it is your identity.
It was my identity for the longest time. I was Big Sims, the football player, and, you know, okay, I got drafted to the Argos, right? And when I got drafted, my mom hit her head when she was going to wheel trans, and she got a subdural hematoma and she needed surgery. So while I'm like preparing to see if I was even going to get drafted or not, she was in the hospital. Then on draft day, you know, I get drafted. It was probably a few days later. She got the procedure, right, to drain the blood, the fluid from her head. And they're like, no, it's no problem. The doctor was like, it's no problem. She's going to be awake. And when she comes out, you'll be able to talk to her and whatever. So, come after the surgery, she's getting wheeled down the hall into her room and she's looking at me and she's like, are you okay? She's like, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm like, Mom, do you know who I am? And she's just like, broke my heart. So now I am, I get drafted. Now I'm doing, going to training camp, and I didn't have a car. So after training camp, maybe 10 o'clock, I'd go take the bus from UFT Mississauga to the hospital downtown and stay there all night and then go. So it was just almost a month of that. And I was just like, I was done. I didn't care about anything except for, you know, and then, you know, luckily my mom was able to come out of the hospital and see me play an exhibition game, like at the Sky Dome and stuff. And that was great, like seeing her. But so that happened. And then she got breast cancer. And then I was just like, man, I don't know if football is maybe God's trying to tell me something, right? Then she was in remission and she was, I had an opportunity to play in France, right? And I'm like, Mom, I don't know if I'm good. She's like, Mom, Sean, go. I'll be okay. Trust me. I was talking to her doctors, the nurses. They're like, Sean, she's fine. No problem. So I go and play in France. And, I'm there for a little bit. And we're in playoffs. And we have one more game. I lose the game. I'm calling her to tell her that, you know, I'm coming home. And the whole time I was there, you know, I'd call every other day to check with the nurses. She's fine. She's fine. She's fine. I call. Couldn't get a hold of her. My best friend Josh goes to see her. And the my next door neighbor is like, she's at the hospital. I call the nurse. You need to get here as fast as possible. So I fly there. I get to the airport. Josh picks me up. We go to the hospital. My mom sees me and she's like, smiles. What took you so long? And boom. Went downhill. 2 weeks on her birthday, because I knew she was waiting for her birthday. You know, she watched me eat my my breakfast, and then, you know, we're waiting for the cake, and it's like, you know, when somebody's dying and there's like that breath that is like, you know, the, like they take that, and I look at her and I'm like, it's okay, Mom. I'll be okay. Yeah, I'll be okay. And she shed one tear and passed away. And I was just like even before that, I was, you know, I thought she was sleeping and I was just like, Mom, I don't know. It's like every time I try and play football or whatever, it's like something happens and I think I'm going to retire. And she got up. She's like, Sean, don't you. And she went back to say, and it was just like, after she passed away, I had to make this decision whether I wanted to play football or not. But it was just like, now there's no safety net, you know? So I had to start working. So then I started working at the same hospital where she passed away. And I was there for like 13 years. And, you know, getting back to it, it's like, it was such an identity being Sean, the football player. And then it was Sean, the protector. You know, I was protecting people. And, you know, when my mom died, there was nobody there to protect me. But everybody's looking, you know, for protection from me, but there's nobody, you know? And I was just like, I, you know, what I love about acting is like, especially when you book and you're on set, it's like, people are protecting you. That's like, I'm so not used to that, you know? Cause I'm always, anybody sees me, it's like, you know, oh, you're so big, you're gonna protect me, right? It's like who's gonna do that for me?
Yeah.
Sorry, I kind of went on a rant, but
no. Like, it's the idea of and who protects the protector?
Yeah,
right. There needs to be, and I think that's where we do, I think, such a disservice to, I think, a lot of people, you know. And
yeah.
I think, and it's the problematic typecasting that comes with not just our industry but just social. Right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting, and this is just going back to, you know, not to like, well, we've trauma bonded.
No,
we've both lost brothers and been through very similar situations, but there was an interesting feeling of, after my mom died, of, well, now what? How much was I doing to appease my mom? Or think I was appeasing my mom. Thinking like, oh, I want her to see me do these things. Almost to the point of like, I should get married. Because my mom has always said she'd wanted to see me get married. Like, which is just ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
And then after she passes away, there's almost like, oh, and I hate saying this because it sounds awful, a weird sense of relief. And that like freedom, but that freedom that comes with insane amounts of change and challenge and grief as well too. Did you feel something like that? Was that a big like nexus for change for you?
So for my mom to pass away, because it's like she had kidney failure, you know, the subdural hematoma, then breast cancer, like she was a strong woman, you know, and she was worried about like, you know, what was going to happen to me. For my mom to pass away, and when I said, like, Mom, it's okay, I'll be okay, and she passed away, she knew I was going to be okay. So I didn't feel that so much, but when my mom was on her deathbed, like, my friends came, because everybody came to Mama Sims's house when they were younger, and Mom would cook. And, you know, me and one of my best friends, Raph, we were talking to the doctor, and Raph's fiance was talking to my mom in the room. And my mom said, the biggest regret is that I'm not going to be able to see my grandchildren. And this is the same woman that every time, like, she see a girl coming, Sean, dude, be careful. These girls, you don't know, they're gonna try and get pregnant, da 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 da. And these girls, and she had the best name for it. She's like, what happened to the lie down artist? That lie down these girls are a bunch of lie down artists and all this stuff. She'd scare me straight on, like, you know what I mean? And then now all of a sudden, you know what I mean? She's like, you better not get any girl pregnant, you better not, blah blah blah. And now she's on her deathbed and she's like, the biggest regret is that I'm not going to be able to see my grandchildren. So when she passed, yeah, So then I'm like in these relationships that I know aren't going to work, but I'm trying to make them work because, you know, now the freeing part was that I knew that she knew I was going to be okay, you know? And I think everything happened for a reason. When I went to France, it like it was a life-changing experience. But like, I just know she's with me all the time. You know what I mean? And she's watching over me. So it's just like, I'm okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I did feel that. Yeah.
Yeah. And something that just clicks in my head. And again, this is a huge assumption. And please correct me if I'm wrong. But do you find acting gives you the ability to be a vulnerable human being when the rest of society has said, you're a big black dude, you can't be vulnerable, you need to protect everyone else?
Yeah. So I'm constantly walking on eggshells, you know, and I am very, you know, I try and like my voice, I change my voice sometimes just to, you know, make, and it's just like when I'm acting, I can be who I want to be. But at the same time, I'm still learning to let myself go. You know what I mean? And get angry, right? Imagine always keeping your anger in check, you know, and it's just like I'm almost like I almost typecasted myself in life, right? I'm first, I'm the big football player. Then I'm the big protecting security guard. And I'm doing these things where it's like, it's just capitalizing on my size and my strength. And I always have to keep myself in check because anytime, you know, I come around the corner and, you know, we're dealing with a cold white situation or whatever, as soon as I come, they're trying to provoke me. You know what I mean? Not just as a big man, but like, you know, as a black man too. It's like, you know, they start, oh yeah, you're a real thug. Oh yeah. You know, it's just like, and you have to hear all this stuff. And it's just like, you learn that patience and you learn to just, you know, control your anger, like control your emotions. And now it's learning to like, and especially in acting, to bring those emotions out. And emotions that you haven't even used, because it's just like, as a man, you know what I mean? As you're taught as a man, and it's like, you know, I'm a, you know, West Indian background, you know, you're not supposed to like show emotions like that. You're not supposed to, you know, and it's just like, now you're learning, you know, and it's like, you're kind of taught like to take that emotion you're feeling and transfer it into something else. You know what I mean? So you could, when I was playing football, it's like you might get emotional on the field and pissed, you know, or you want to get emotion, you feel that, and then you try and you transform that into anger, and then you push that out. But it's like I had an outlet, I had a field, I had players that are willing in pads, and now you're afraid to let that out because, you know, now you're in your acting studio or, you know what I mean? You're training and it's like, you don't want to let that out because you don't know. And I remember, I don't know if this was you, but it was like when my mom died, it was like, and the funeral, I didn't want to cry because I didn't know if I was going to get out of it because now it's just me. And I didn't know if I could get myself out of that hole, you know? So it's just, it's new having these outlets that you can,
yeah,
you know? Yeah.
There is a huge parallel that I'm realizing, and it's in medicine, in medicine, there's the idea of emotional restraint, right? Something is happening in front of you that will make any human who's not a sociopath upset. You as the doctor can't show that because you don't want the patient to panic, but also you can't constantly be showing that, otherwise you're going to burn out. It's so getting into acting where it's like, now I need to be emotionally vulnerable and show that to the world is really, really hard because I've tamped it down for so long.
Yeah,
there's such a parallel, and it's obviously, it's not like these are completely different ways to have emotional restraint, mm-hmm. where yours is, you know, not just in your professional career, in security, having to emotionally restrain yourself so you're not being unprofessional as a security guard, but also as an individual walking through this society, who you are, having to emotionally restrain yourself because of perception.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like, my mind.
You know, yeah. You know, I think we had this conversation before, and as like, sometimes I was like, you know, sometimes I feel like a gorilla in a cage. You know what I mean? It's like you, it's like they, everybody wants to see the gorilla, but nobody wants the gorilla to be a gorilla.
Poke, poke, poke.
And then when the gorilla has, you know what I mean? It's just like, oh, I can't believe, oh my God, somebody called, you know, it's like, I can't.
Get your cell phones out, film it. Yeah.
Yeah. But even like, okay, like you've been in situations in the merge where it's like, you know, maybe a guy has some mental health issues and he's on a form and he's a big guy. You know, all the nurses are like, oh my gosh, oh, I'm so scared. But, you know, this guy's just maybe working out in his room. And, well, I'm scared. Why are you scared? Well, he's working out in his room. Okay. You know, it's usually not the big guys you have to worry about.
Because they're aware of the impact that the size has on society.
I think of like how many physical, you know, encounters I've had. It's not the big guys you worry about, you know? Yeah, but.
What else have you noticed? Have you brought from your careers prior to acting into your acting career?
I've noticed that athletes have an easier time becoming actors, because when you're a student athlete, all you do is go to work, study, you know, work out, train. The coach tells you to do this, you do it. The teacher tells you to do this, you do that. You know what I mean? And it's just like the star players, the hard workers, can incorporate that into acting and learning how to become a better actor. So I've noted, like, I used to go to this kind of like sports specific gym where it's like people who are trying to go pro, people are trying to get scholarships, people who got their scholarships and are trying to go into combines and you know, all types of stuff. And you know, I met like two of my best friends, Julian Laurent and Denzel Phillip. And these guys are like, Denzel is just built like a, like colossus. And, you know, I was just like, one day I was just like, you know what, guys, you guys should be actors. I'm like, really? And, you know, they gave it a try. We're under the same agency and they're booking left and right and doing. And it's just because, like, I've known Denzel for years, and ever since he was a kid, he'd go 2 hours from on the bus to go to this gym and then go back home and do the same thing. It's just a work ethic.
Yes. Huge, huge work ethic. And I think, and I don't think we give athletes this credit, but time management skills, especially as a student athlete. And as an actor, that's probably one of the most powerful lessons I learned from my time as a student athlete as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
is how to manage my time properly and be successful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Since being in this industry, has there been anything that has surprised you about entertainment, acting, the world?
I think it's dealing with the personalities. When you've been in, you know, for most of my life, I was playing a sport, and I was playing a violent sport. I was playing a sport where it's like coaches would encourage you. Like, let's say, you know, you were, you know, one of my good friends, Daryl Cole, he was a offensive lineman, and we go to practice and we get into fights. You know what I mean? It's just like they break it up And the coach would be like, good hustle, and blah, blah, blah. And now you're a civilian and you're living in this world where it's like, you know, people are talking to you crazy. You know what I mean? And it's just like, and it like, even what, you know, I joke with my teacher about this. So it's like, there's always that one guy in the class where it's like, you know, good looking guy, probably, you know, works out a lot and just thinks, because I work out and I'm a good looking guy, I'm going to be just, you know, the shit. And they read that, you know, they read the book on how to be an alpha and stuff. And it's just like when they're talking to you, you know, they're trying to talk down to you or try. And it's like, and then you have to just sit there and it's like, you know, like you weren't a gladiator, like you weren't, you know what I mean? It's just like, okay, all right, cool. And it's like, this is the new normal now, you know? So it took a while from playing a sport to being a civilian.
Do you think
if that makes sense, if I'm rambling, just no, tell me. Okay.
It's emotional restraint. It's emotional restraint, right?
Yeah.
To be watching these people in front of you being like, what? And then you, yeah. I don't know about you, but I kind of go, and this is so bad. Am I the only sane person here?
No, because other people see it too, but it's just like, you know, they've developed that like, oh, okay, that customer service where it's like, oh, okay, this person is noted, you know, just care about, but it's like, sometimes I see that and it's like, ah, you know what I mean? And I see that so much in like, you know, when I was just starting out, and especially, you know, you're doing like maybe reenactment shows and, you know, there's always that one actor that tries to act too cool for school and is just like not needed. You know, it's like, hey, how's my, we good, you know? And just like standing, and he's lifting up his calves and looking at it. He's like, yeah, okay, you know? I think we should do it like this. It's like, come on, like. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you did not go to theater school per se, like professional theater school. I mean, obviously you're training. No. What? And I know you had support from a prior partner. Mm-hmm. What? How did you build the career? How did you do? How did you know what you needed to do? What? How did you learn?
Honestly, I always relate this. It's almost like learning how to be a man sometimes, where it's, you don't get told all of the things that, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's guessing and figuring it out and trial by error, because some people don't tell you stuff, right? What did I learn? A lot of it I learned is especially just coming, like starting out, when I found an agent and whatnot. Wendy Elaine Wright on YouTube. Yes. And I started watching the videos and I was like, here's not, because I like her because she's like real. You know what I mean? She's just, she tells it how it is. And it's, I'm used to like having coaches like that, you know, calling you out your name and whatever. And it's just like, yeah, and it's just like, oh, don't do this. This is stupid. Fix your resume, do this. And then, you know, I have an agent that is not afraid to tell you you're screwing up too. And it's like, don't do this. Make sure. Here's an example. And then following that example, like, you know, the video, like she'd send videos of like, here's our, some of our most successful actors and how they, you know, set up their audition tapes and whatever. And it's like, oh, okay. Because there's so many things you're not doing. And it's, I have, so like since end of 2000 to now, I've had like 335 auditions and I have all my auditions in it, like on my computer. And it's like, I can watch them and just like, oh my gosh, it's just seeing where you are now. But nobody tells you, nobody really tells you. It's like, oh, read this. You know how many times it's like, you'll get something from casting like workbook and it's like, you're like, but where's the due date? I can't find a due date, but it says this due date, but this due date is today and I just got it today. So what does that mean? Like, where do I find, you know what I mean? And like looking for that, there's so many things and you're afraid to ask. And that's why it's very important that, you know, once you get that knowledge, make sure that you're bringing your the people around you up too and explaining that. Because if you don't, like, you know, I like my boys are like Julian Laurent, Denzel Phillip, John Thomas Gaultier, and it's just like we will, like, I will tell him, like, hey, don't do that, or he'll explain to me, and we just help each other. But it's like I said, it's like being a man. Like, sometimes, you know, you're getting the wrong information. Sometimes nobody's giving you information, and sometimes you have like some really cool people that it's like, oh no, you do it like this or blah blah blah, you know?
Yeah, there's a weird gatekeeping in this industry.
Yeah,
and I don't really know why. Yeah. It's not like there's, like, it's like, oh, if I keep this hidden, I'll get the role. This is not a thing.
And yeah.
Yeah. It's very frustrating.
You know what's what? You know what's funny? Like, I'm a COVID baby, right? So all my, you know, auditions for the longest time were self-tapes, right? So it's like.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So then it's like, you know, I've probably had like 4 auditions in person where, you know, I had to go to wherever and actually do it. And you go there and there's like everybody's like, you know, just, you know, in their corner, eyeing each other down. And like, you know, maybe there'll be a few like, oh, we know each other. We're from the same suit. But, you know, I go in there. It's like, hey, what's up? And everyone's like, you know, it reminds me of like being in a combine. You know what I mean? Like a football combine. Like, you know, it's like you're trying out and there's all these scouts there and you're trying, you know, you have your group of people, but everybody's like eyeing each other down and, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, do you find you're able to withstand that immense pressure that can come with that?
Yeah, better? Because it's like I've dealt with people in the same situation and they're hitting me. So like, you're not hitting me and I'm not afraid of you. I mean, you could be, they could be better than me, but I'm never going to know because they're going to go into the room and do something. And then I'm going to go into the room and do something.
Yes.
Right. So it's like, you never, like me, I like, it doesn't bother me.
Mm. That's so, so interesting. And I think something you also said, which I was recalling, you're the second like football player turned actor that I've had. And something that he had mentioned, he played for Harvard, and he mentioned about how much he craves and has been in search for an acting coach who will give him the constructive criticism that he needs, akin to a football coach. And finding it tough, because he's like, I can handle it. Like, and I think about like some of the surgeons I've worked with who will like scream at me, and I'm like, no, and I understand this is constructive, but you're like, I don't need wishy-washy. Yay, you did your acting so good. I'm like, tell me what I did wrong so I can fix it.
So that's like my agent, right? My agent is just like no hold. But I've noticed lately that she's been like, you know, we'll be talking about something. It's like, well, hey, how did you like my, you know, my reel? And she's like, well, you know, it's just we. And I'm like, just tell me. And she's like, fine, it's da 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 da. But before, when I was new, she would just be like, you know what I mean? But I guess it's like now we're, you know, developing that, you know, kind of relationship now where it's like, you know, maybe she doesn't want to hurt my feelings too much or whatever. But I'd prefer that. And my teacher, he is like a father that you're constantly looking for approval from, but he won't give you the approval. You know what I mean? So you're like, you know, you do it and it's like, yeah, okay. Next. You know what I mean?
Oh my God, and you're having like, anxiety by process.
And then it's just like, what? And you know, you go to next week and you're doing something. And I'll never forget, I was in class and it was like the past few weeks, I'm just like doing, I'm doing my scenes and I'm not getting like feedback that I want. Like the ego in me wants me to be like, oh, good job. Like that first school I was talking about, it's like, oh, good. Oh, that was wonderful. That was wonderful. It was shit, right? But he's just like, you know, huh, okay, next. So I do this scene, I finish it, I sit down, I'm like this, and he's right there, he's looking at me, smiling, and I'm like, what? What's up? And he's like, I'm just looking at you. You're going to be a famous actor one day. And I was just... So it's like, my teacher, he doesn't give praise, like, all the time or often. But when you do get that, it's like somebody telling you, you're in a relationship and somebody telling you, I love you all the time. It's like, I love you. I love you. It doesn't mean as much as somebody, you know, that doesn't say it all the time is like, Janet, I love you. You know what I mean? It's just like.
Yeah. It dilutes it, I think, for some people. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you know, when there's a respect there. Mm-hmm. And when there's a respect there for the person higher up in your hierarchy, right?
Yeah.
When you get that affirmation, then it means doubly or if not triply, quadruply more to get a little smidgen
Absolutely.
Of affirmation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Do you have any advice for anyone who might be looking to change careers into acting or is kind of struggling to find their way?
You have to treat your what you're doing every day to get by as your side piece, and you have to treat your dreams as your main chick. Your side piece is never going to decide what's going to go down. It's the main chick. You're always making a main person happy. You know what I mean? And it's just like some. You can't be afraid to just leap, you know? Like, I was so scared, like, when my mom died, and I was like, I stopped playing football because it's just like, man, I you know, I don't have a safety net. And then, you know, 2020 happens, and I have no safety net, and I'm just like, just leap. And since I've let, it's just, it's an adventure, and it's working. And sometimes... You know, it's not going to be, you know, sunshine and rainbows all the time. It's work, but it's just the adventure. Like, I'm in an adventure where, you know, there's no invincible mode anymore. You know what I mean? There's no cheat codes. Like, when I was playing football, it's just like, you know, you were leveled up. You could get to a certain level. Now it's just like a new frontier. And don't be afraid to leap. But as far as, like, you know, when I'm, like, I have a job that I may not enjoy because I'm not doing what I love, but I make sure I do that to the best of my ability. But if I book something, nothing is going to stop me from going. You know what I mean? And it's just, like, because acting is my main chick. I love her. You know what I mean? So it's just like, yeah, I have this relationship where, you know, I'm making money and I'm doing something I don't necessarily like, but it's like, don't be afraid. I guess, never let your girlfriend get in the way of finding your wife.
Oh.
Like, at the end of the day, it's just like, you know, like, I'm never going to let my job get in the way again, because before it was just like I was doing overtime and I was doing this, and it was like manana, I'll do it, you know, January, I'll do it in the summer, and then it was the next January and the next summer, and it's just like, now I'm just going. I am not a womanizer. I am not a thing. I'm just using analogies. I'm an analogy person, so please don't judge me.
And okay, I will this corroborate is what I, that. No, this knowing is, you as this a human is all I person,
do. Yeah, friend. Yeah, yes, yeah. I'm just makes it just that analogy works for me.
And
you know?
it makes sense. Yeah. And I think what my question is before I ask you my like questions I always ask at the end.
Well,
like this is kind of a wooey question, but what made you or makes you not scared to have that leap? Like, is that an innate sense that you've just had always? Or, like, what was it that you were like, eh, here we go?
No, I'm I'm scared. Scared all the time. Like, you know, the brave people are scared. You know what I mean? It's the bravery is knowing that you're scared and doing the right thing. You know, so it's just, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm going to be, you know, a successful working actor all the time where I can make this my job. You know what I mean? And I can enjoy my life and just living my dream. Maybe I had to come to the realization that maybe, just maybe, I'm not the one that's supposed to, you know, go to the next level or whatever. Maybe it's my friends around me that I told them, like, hey, you know, maybe you should try acting. And they became actors and they're booking and whatever. Maybe my role in the universe was to tell that one person the right thing that got them to be greater, right? But it's just enjoying the journey, you know, and just being the best person I can be, you know, and it's just accepting that. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, and it's scary, but it's exciting at the same time. But I know I have people who love me. I know I've met, like, amazing friends like you, like Johnny, like, you know what I mean? And I'm going to have lifelong friends, and maybe that's just a journey. Maybe that's what happened. But, you know, I could, just like my mom died and she knew that I was going to be okay, I can die tomorrow knowing that I'm actually going for something that I truly love.
I'm getting emotional again. That's so beautiful.
Nope.
Buddy. Okay. No. A happy, funny questions while I wipe my nose and my eyes here. And beautiful. You're a fucking beautiful guy. Do you have any favorite moments on set?
Yeah. Yeah.
They could be funny stories too.
Actually, so I have, you know, I was telling you about, like, John Thomas Gautier, right? And when I just got my, I became full union into ACTRA, I got this, I booked this show called Pretty Hard Cases, right? And that's where I met Joseph and Johnny, right? And since then, we've become, like, you know, we're just like this. And this is the call sheet.
Oh my God.
And he framed the call sheet from when we first met. So, yeah, that was really cool.
Oh my God. That is so special.
Right there. Yeah.
Oh my God. So. For those of you listening and aren't watching it on YouTube, Sean just showed a framed call sheet from when he met his buddy. That is.
Yeah. My bromances.
We both know Johnny. He's my sober buddy in Christ or whatever. This is such a corny thing to say, but, like, that is the reason.
Yeah.
That's what absolutely. Life should be about, right?
Yeah.
Is connection. If at the end of days we're looking back at, like, our godforsaken life or whatever, that those are the things that we remember. That is so fucking special. That is awesome.
I'm a firm believer now that, like, things happen for a reason, no matter how bad and how, you know, it's just like, you know, if I didn't get cut and, you know, go and play in France and, you know, my mom passing away, I don't know if I would be the person I am today. You know what I mean? As I remember, one of my best friends, his dad died. But before, I used to call him and talk to him, you know, when my mom died, and, you know, he was a very spiritual person. And he told me, he's like, you know, whoever's listening out there, whether you believe in God or the universe or whatever you believe in, he's like, you know, Sean, you have to be careful on, like, when you ask God to make you stronger or give you a blessing, right? Because you know, he's not going to give it to the way like Alakazam, boom, you got it. He's going to do it his way, right? And God is like, you know, or the universe is like a personal trainer. You know, you say you want to lift 225 and, you know, he's going to put 215 on and you're going to be struggling. You're going to be struggling. And one day you're going to lift that up and then he's going to put on more weight. Right. Because that's how you grow. Right. So it's like everything that's happened to you. Like, take that. And especially if you're an actor. And I don't mean like, you know, go method if that's your thing, what, you know what I mean? But it's like, take those experiences, because a lot of times, you know, especially now, like these younger kids, it's like, I remember my, you know, teacher telling me, he's like, you know, sometimes these kids like read the script and don't know what's going on in the script because they don't have those experiences. So it's like, you have to have that trial and error. You have to fail. You have to fall flat on your face. You have to be embarrassed. You have to, you know, your ego gets checked. Your everything. It's like, it iron sharpens iron. And it's like, you have to go through those experiences. So like, yeah, go on. No, I was just saying, like, while I miss my mom and, you know, I love her, like I had to understand that it's like I can't be as egotistical to think that, you know, because I don't understand the universe's plan, that she was just taken away arbitrarily. You know what I mean? It's just like you have to go through it. And like, with that sacrifice, you know, she's made me a better person.
Oh, holy. Yeah. I think that's a way to think about things that is so emotionally mature and a little frustrating, because I think we want to stomp our feet at the unfairness of it all. And I think so much we look at some of the people around us and they haven't been through a lot of the stuff that we've been through, and they're achieving the things that we want. We're like, this isn't fair. Stomp, 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 stomp. But I like that you said, like, there's no way it can be arbitrary. Because I think regardless of who you believe in this world, even if it's science, that physically and scientifically and spiritually, nothing is arbitrary. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but that's got me thinking. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Everything happens for a reason, and it's not your job to understand how things work all the time, and how it's just, you have to go through life. You gotta, you know, put your energy against, you know, the negative and change your vibration. You know what I mean? Because the harder you push against it, you know, the higher you vibrate. You know, and it's just like, you have to go through that stuff.
Yeah. Foof. Is there anything you are looking forward to coming up to this year? Coming up this year.
I don't know about this year, but I'm looking forward to working with you someday.
Hell yeah. It'll happen. Put it in the universe.
Yep. It's going to happen.
It'll happen. Yeah, absolutely.
One day. I think it's going to be a big year for us.
I think it will be too. And I think it's one of those things where my mind needs to change the definition of what is a successful big year. Because I think we see what society perceives actors as being successful, and we know having been in it, and it's like so hard, right? It's so hard.
It's like, you know, you're in high school and you see the person who's student council president, who has, you know, is getting A's all over the place, who's always happy and whatever, and then, you know, you notice she's not, you know, they're not there for, you know, the semester because they had a nervous breakdown or something, you know? Like, everybody's not happy. And it's like, you should never be jealous of what a envious of what another person has, because you don't know what they had to go through to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think jealousy is, again, like one of the lowest common denominator emotions. Mm-hmm. It's tough because we all are jealous as human beings. It's just in our nature. Mm-hmm. But I think there was this amazing quote, and I will always butcher it. It's like, I can't remember who said it even, which is terrible. But about like people never judge those below them. Like the CEO should never judge or say bad things or like, what's it, troll, you know, mm-hmm. or critique.
You should never punch up. Punch down. Yeah.
Exactly. Punch down. Like the people who are trying to who are punching up, trying to like disparage you, they're sitting in the cheap seats. They didn't even buy a full price ticket to your show. Like, mm-hmm. just no. Just rise above. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like, I've grown up watching, you know, black heroes that have gone through stuff way worse than me. Like, imagine being, you know, Jackie Robinson, or, you know, the first black guy to do anything. You know, you can't just be good. You have to fly.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think everybody has this feeling where it's like, things have to be given to them, or they're entitled to something. And just go out there and be, you know what I mean? And be the best you can be and be great, you know? And it's in being great. It's like, you have to study, you have to practice, you have to, you know, sometimes, you know, you're by yourself and you know, that imposter syndrome comes in, and, you know, it's like, wow, this person's booking something, that person, why aren't I? It's like, now I just think, well, what can I do to get better? How can I make this car faster? You know what I mean? Am I going to the gym? Am I working on my elocution? Am I working on, you know, am I reading monologues? Am I reading screenplays? Am I doing all, there's so many things I can do to get better, you know? And there's so many, there people that, another thing is like people who say like, oh, you know, I really got to get to school eventually and blah, 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 blah. Like, you want to be great, right? You want to be great, like a great actor, like, go to class. You have to go to class. Go to class, because that would be like you're a UFC fighter and you're fighting in the UFC and you don't train. You don't go to train. You know what I mean? It's like you have to train, because you want to be champion or you want to stay champion. You have to do all these things. You're not going to just walk off the street and start knocking people out and being a champion. It's like work. So go to class.
Well, with that being said, do you have any other final words of wisdom or advice?
Don't ever let anybody tell you they don't love you twice. That's it. If you're in an environment and somebody is you know, not invested in you, or you feel they're not invested in you, or they feel that they're, you know, you're trying to do something great for yourself and be the best person you can, and they're hindering that, you know, maybe it's time to move forward and keep moving. You know, I'm lucky enough, you know, I have an amazing girlfriend, you know, with me for like the past, you know, this is our third year now, and, you know, COVID babies, right? We just met each other during COVID, and it's just like, you know, she's amazing. You know, I have a great core group of friends, and that's another thing. Like, people, they're going to be people in your life that you thought you were your friends, and then stuff gets really hot and you're going to find out who your friends are. You know what I mean? Thank the universe for that. because they're showing you before you become before you become the person you're supposed to be, and you would have brought those people with you, and they would have torn you down. So it's like now, you know, surround yourself around friends that are tested, and they're not friends. Their family, because family you can get in an argument with, and you know what I mean. Maybe sometimes me and Janet don't see eye to eye, but like I'm never going to not talk to her, or I'm never gonna, you know. It's just because we're family now, you know. That's it.
Thank you everyone for tuning in, and thank you Sean for being my guest this week. Thank you so much for being so vulnerable, so lovely, for making me cry, for making me ruin my makeup several times. After we stopped recording, I was very, very emotional. He is, like I said in the introduction, and as you've just witnessed, one of my favorite people on this planet. Thank you, Sean. I hope you will all tune in next week for another episode of Second Act Actors. Bye.